The Mother's Secret by Claire Swatman. Read by Anna Acton. Prologue. Something feels wrong as soon as I turn the corner. The house is in complete darkness, which is unusual. Light glows through the curtains of the other houses either side, making my home appear lonely and forlorn. Standing on the stone step, I slide the key into the lock. It turns effortlessly and the door pushes open with a click. Silence spills down the stairs and pushes past me, surrounding me as I step into the cool hallway. The radiator ticks familiarly, and I shrug my coat away before hanging it on the hook. There are no other coats there, which is odd. There are no other shoes lined up along the wall either. I shake each boot off and leave them standing guard all alone. My ears listen for familiar noise. Footsteps, someone breathing, a kettle boiling. Anything. But there's nothing but quietness. My footsteps are muffled on the carpeted floor as I walk towards the door of the living room, which stands ajar. I give it a little push and it opens slowly. It's dark in there too. Just a faint orange glow from the streetlight outside, giving the furniture some form and shape through the heavy net curtains. The grate of the fire is completely dark, not even the smallest ember glowing to suggest someone has been there recently. I shiver as I walk down the hallway. Ahead of me, the door to the kitchen stands open, but I can see as I approach that there's no one there. I walk quietly across the tiles, my feet tapping gently with every step, and lay my hand on the kettle, the stove, the pan that sits on the side. Stone cold. There's a single cup on the table, a rim of coffee staining the inside, and a red heart shape on the outside where lipstick has marked it. Half a biscuit sits on a china plate, a small bite taken out of it, the crumbs scattered round as though the person eating it had suddenly remembered they had something more important to do and just got up and left. As I walk up the stairs, my breath hitches in my chest as a noise comes from the loft hatch. I stop, not daring to look up, listening for more signs of life. But there's nothing, except the quiet hum of silence pressing heavily on my eardrums. I cover my ears with my hands and move on, pushing open the door of Mum's bedroom. The covers on her bed are neatly tucked in, hospital corners perfectly folded, a pink cushion propped up in front of the pillow. Her hairbrush with a few grey hairs caught in the bristles lies neatly in front of the mirror, next to a modest collection of makeup, face creams and pills. Mum's always so well put together. Her room is always neat and tidy. But as I run my finger slowly along the wooden top of the dressing table, there's a thick layer of dust on the end of it. Every surface is covered in thick dust. It looks as though the room's been abandoned for years. And yet we were all here this morning, together. Weren't we? My body starts to shake as I walk quickly to the next room, the bedroom I share with my sister Kate, and push the door open. I'm not sure what I expected, but my heart almost stops when I look in here. Instead of the two beds pressed tightly against the walls, with a tiny table squeezed in the middle, the room is almost empty, as though nobody has been in here for years. Thick dust covers this room too. There's a pasting table in the middle with a roll of wallpaper hanging over it, the brush sitting on top, dried out. Pots of paint are piled in the corner, and a cot in pieces is propped up against the wall. I stumble as I step towards the table and lift up the corner of the wallpaper. It's brittle and almost snaps in my hand, but I can see that the pattern is the same as the one that's been on my bedroom wall for as long as I can remember. My knees feel weak, and I'm not sure they'll be able to hold my weight for much longer. So I crouch down and hold my head, pressing the palms of my hands hard into my eyes until I see stars. But when I look up, nothing has changed. I slowly walk back out of the room and tread down the stairs, clinging to the banister as I do. Each step makes my legs shake, and my heart is pounding a hole in my ribcage as I try to swallow down the panic that threatens to overwhelm me. When I reach the bottom of the stairs, I glance back at the kitchen, and my heart stops again. I scurry closer, my eyes surely deceiving me, and stop dead in the doorway. It's as if the house has gone back in time to the 1970s. The cupboards painted a pale blue, and an ashtray on the side with a cigarette propped on the edge, a trail of smoke rising from it and dissipating into the freezing cold air. My heart is in my mouth, and my breath comes in panicky bursts as I walk towards the back door, which is now wide open to the dark winter night, and out into the back garden. As I step out into the freezing air, I shiver. Slowly, I tread forwards, each socked foot sinking into the cold, damp grass. But I can't stop. I'm pulled almost magnetically towards the end of the garden, where the shed stands, its door open and swinging in the breeze, squeaking with every back turn. When I reach the shed and look down, there's a patch of ground just in front of it, where the earth looks disturbed, as though someone has been digging there, the soil turned over and patted down. What's been planted there? Or buried? I turn back to the house, seeing it in darkness, its windows like black eyes staring into the night. Why is no one else here? Where have they all gone? What the hell is going on? My mouth opens and I draw in a deep breath and try to scream, but nothing comes out. Here I stand in the middle of the garden screaming silently into the world, a soundless voice unheard by everyone, desperate for someone to come and save me. My sheet is tangled round my body like a straitjacket, constricting my movement, and I'm covered in sweat. My whole body pounds to the rhythm of my heart, and I pull air into my lungs, waiting for it to slow down so I can breathe normally again. Pulling my arms out of the sheet, I untwist myself from its confines and drag myself into a sitting position to wait for the world to right itself again. Beside me, Matt sleeps on, his face pressed into the pillow. The clock glowing next to me on the bedside table says 3 a.m. It's the middle of the night. My heart is pounding, and I try to calm myself by drawing in deep breaths. It was only a dream. But it's a dream I've had several times over the last few years, and the panic had felt very real.